Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business, and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome, welcome. Both of my guests today are focused on reinventing the way things have been by focusing on solutions for the next chapter. My second guest is former archaeologist and Sierra Club activist Courtney White. In 1997, he dropped out of the conflict industry, as he calls it, to build bridges between conservationists, ranchers, farmers, and others who normally might lock horns. And today we'll highlight some of the practical solutions that are already making a difference to our planet from his book. First, we're going to look, when we look at the next big chapter in life, many people's lives, some are comfortable with it, some are not. And today we're talking about the tsunami of 76 million baby boomers who are redefining the R word as we speak. Nancy Berg, along with her three expert co-authors, wrote The Retirement Boom, an all-inclusive guide to money, life, and health in your next chapter. The authors say retirement is not an end, it's a new beginning, a chance to reboot with new purpose and energy in your life. Let me tell you a little bit about my guest. Nancy Berg is a former national security advisor to the Vice President of the United States. She's held high-level positions from the White House to Capitol Hill, the Pentagon, and nonprofit sector. Nancy's authored five books in her field for the Aspen Institute, including Alleviating Global Poverty, and she wrote several congressional studies on a number of defense-related studies before writing Reboot Your Life and The Retirement Boom with her co-authors. And let me tell you, her co-authors are Catherine Allen, Rita Foley, and Jay Smith. My guest, Nancy Berg, welcome.
Thank you, and thank you so much for that introduction, Vicki.
You're very welcome. Yeah, so today, retirement is less about stopping work and more about reinventing ourselves, more about beginning a new life, if you will. And Nancy, I know you've reinvented yourself along the way. You've had a very distinguished career in national security. Now you're consulting, you're teaching leadership at George Washington University. You're doing the work you're doing with your co-authors. Tell us how and why your reinvention began for you.
Yes. I had had a very long career, as you pointed out, and rather successful in national security, international relations. And I met these women, and it was kind of serendipity that I met them, the three names you read off. And we began talking about things we value in life. And we talked about how great it is to take a break from work. And we realized we had all done that. And the importance of recharging and starting something new. And all of us have, during our careers, tried new things, done new things, you know, not stayed at the same job for decades. And so we got together and we wrote the book called Reboot Your Life. And at that time, I began doing that myself. I had already taken breaks in my career, particularly because I had young children. But I began trying this new thing of writing a book with them, and we started a small business called Reboot Partners. And I transitioned out of doing the full-time work I'd been doing in the government and in the nonprofit sector. I transitioned to teaching a course and just doing other things. It kind of happened in a natural way. It just kind of flowed for me.
Yeah.
But it's definitely a reinvention.
And that's great when it happens organically like that. It's not always the case for everybody. And so we're going to look at some ways that, or some things that maybe people might want to consider. Yes. You know, boomers are known for reinventing the wheel. You know, as a generation, we know, I mentioned there's 76 million of them. As a generation, they'll be healthier than their parents and live longer. They have no plans to slip into the background as our grandparents might have done.
Yes.
They want to remain relevant. They want to remain fulfilled and leave legacies. And many will continue, you say, to work well into their 70s and 80s because they want to. And others, of course, because they need to support themselves. So let's look at the book and how this book helps them do that. Just give me an overall summary of how this book helps boomers make those changes and those transitions into the next chapter.
Okay. Everything you said is very true. And you also said at the beginning that some people are comfortable and some are uncomfortable with this idea of retirement or what one does next. We look at it, and this book presents it as an opportunity. Because of our longer lives, it's very possible that we'll live another 20 or 30 years, let's say after turning 65, and if you decide to go into a retirement mode before that, you can live even longer. And so what we try to do in this book is say this is a great opportunity, and give some ways to look at that. We also acknowledge right at the beginning that people can have doubts and fears, and they do. And it's good to just get that out up front. People worry about money.
That fear thing is a huge thing. I remember my father was afraid. He told me he was afraid to retire because all of his friends died when they retired.
Yeah, and you know that is a certain model of retirement. Because if it's just golf, gardening, and grandchildren, and we all love our grandchildren, I have two little ones, if it's just golf, gardening, and grandchildren, it's not enough. Mm-hmm. You know, people end up sitting on the couch, they watch TV, they feel unfulfilled, and it's true that oftentimes, or sometimes, people die after a short time. But the kind of thing we're looking at, and as you mentioned about boomers, they want to be active. And so it's a matter of figuring out and facing up to it. Some people put on blinders and they don't face up to it until the day they're leaving their company, their corporation, or wherever they work. And that's when it gets scary. So we're big advocates of thinking about it ahead, visualizing how you want to live, and then beginning to plan. So that there's a plan in place that incorporates everything from where do I want to live? Do I want to live right where I am? Or do I want to downsize? Or do I want to move to a different city? Who do I want to be near? Do I want to be near kids, or do I want to, be near the water? How do I want it to look? And of course, the important questions of do I want to or need to keep earning money, and what would that look like, and how could that look different from what I'm doing right now? And so we have a lot of information in the book about how to think those things through. We have exercises and lots of stories of other people that can be inspiring.
You have some fabulous resources as well.
Oh, yeah, we do have a bunch of resources, but we want people to really open up their minds and explore about it. And a lot of it has to do with thinking what could be different. You still need to earn money. Fine. What might be a different way of doing that? Maybe there's a way of phasing out of the current job because, that knowledge that we boomers have isn't something that corporations necessarily want to let go right away, or other institutions too, nonprofits. But to think about, is there a different way to earn money? Something where you're more independent, like consulting, or is there an old passion that you want to reignite? Some people have teacher. Mm-hmm. And or some people have played the violin all their life and wanted to be a professional musician. Go be a professional musician. There are great opportunities. And then in the non-earning, it's the same. Is there an old passion? And, you know, what about traveling? What about all of that? But we give permission for people to really, really try to figure it out.
And I love
figure it out with a smile on their face, like, this is exciting.
Yes, whole reinvention, rebooting life. I just love it.
Mm-hmm.
I actually have a somebody I was quite friendly with. I worked with her for a number of years, just always so chic. She was from, I believe, Colombia originally, but she was educated in New York art school. She worked in business. She was a publisher. Very, very chic, always had finely tailored made suits. And one day I was thinking, I wonder what happened to her, because she moved to Arizona to be a real estate broker. She was going to change careers. And this was many years ago, about 15 years ago. And she is now living with the love of her life in Mexico. He's a Spanish artist who's commissioned all over the world. They have a little art studio down in Mexico, mm-hmm. and she's doing that. She's grown her hair down to her butt. She's like, she's having
fun. It's just such a great example.
I barely recognized her, but for her smile, which was like ear to ear, you know.
Oh, I love hearing that. Yeah, it's a really good example.
So we need to take a quick break. We'll be right back. And when we come back, I want to look at some of the ways that we can, or some of the things we might want to focus on to help us make that transition. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. My guest is Nancy Berg. The book is called The Retirement Boom, and this is written with Catherine Allen, Rita Foley, and Jay Smith. We will be right back.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
Do something different with your spare time. Give baby animals at Paws a fresh start. With the assistance of caring volunteers, Paws helps hundreds of orphaned and sick kittens and puppies each year. Join us and save lives. Become a Paws foster care volunteer. For more information, visit paws.org or 425-787-2500. Paws.org or 425-787-2500.
Let's see if I guess that this just isn't working.
Knowing you have a great idea for a book is one thing, writing it another. So what's stopping you? Maybe you can't find time. Maybe you don't know where to begin. Maybe you wrote a couple of chapters, then disappeared down a rabbit hole. Or maybe you'd rather someone else write it for you. Partnering with the right coach or ghostwriter can make all the difference between talking about your book and finishing your book. As an award-winning writer and strategic consultant, Vicki St. Clair's storytelling credits span from business, health, self-help, and memoir to New York Times and USA Today best-selling anthologies. Vicki partners with people just like you at the exact level you need. Whether you need a little encouragement, editorial guidance, or full-blown ghostwriting and consulting services. If you're serious about telling the story you know is inside you, stop procrastinating. Let's get your story down on paper. Contact Vicki today. Email Vicki at VickiSt.Clair.com or call 1-800-495-7617. See more about Vicki and her work at VickiSt.Clair.com.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Join us live every Monday at noon on Alternative Talk 1150 or stream live from conversationslive.net.
No shirt, no shoes, no problem. Come as you are. Alternative Talk 1150 AM.
And welcome back, everyone. Welcome back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, and we're talking about the R word. So we're talking about not just retirement, we're talking about reinvention and rejuvenation and rebooting. And one of the chapters in here is called Reinventing into New Work. And I wanted to look at this, Nancy, because I think a lot of people that I know have an exit strategy, as they call it, in place and are starting to build their own business on the side while they're still working. Some have been forced into that kind of situation because of, you know, they got laid off or job changes, etc. One of the things I read in your book was that 70%, this is staggering to me, 70% of AARP members are currently still helping support their kids on some level. And 40% are helping kids and grandchildren. Staggering to me, because when I was 18, I was told, that's it, buddy. You're financially responsible for yourself now. But obviously circumstances, you know, are different for everybody, and a lot of people run into hard times. But so if you're looking at retirement and you are one of those 70% of people who are supporting your children, that's got to be pretty scary.
Yes. We talk about the sandwich generation, and many of us are actively participants in that sandwich generation, meaning we are supporting our kids to some extent, and I'll explain that in a minute. And on the other end, we may be supporting aging parents. And, you know, they may be living with us, or we may be having to help them financially. But then with our kids, it can be various levels. I mean, maybe you pay the cell phone bill. But on the other hand, maybe the child who's now grown up lives with you, or you're buying a car, or you're, you know, paying for graduate school or something. But it is a thing that can cripple one's own plans for retirement, and so it becomes a situation that needs to be thought about and discussed, because it may be necessary to wean the child in your own self-interest, so that your own retirement funds aren't diminished too greatly.
Yeah, you can't afford to compromise your own future when you're at that stage. So you talk about making your money last. For many people, that is an issue. One of the things you discuss is staying professional. And I was thinking, as I was reading this, I was thinking back to my grandparents, who were self-employed all of their lives. And my grandmother couldn't stand being at home. So in those days, she just went to work at a local cafe. So, you know, a few hours a week. So she got to meet people. Nowadays, we can take those skills we've got and we can translate them into something else. We don't have to go take, you know, a job in a cafe or a bookstore, unless we really want to. Yeah. We can actually develop something from the profession that we've already had. So what kind of things are you seeing there? What's your favorite story in the book? You do share stories in the book here.
Let's see. What we talk about along these lines, I'll think about the book thing in a minute, but We talk about people keeping up in their field and their ability to continue to use what they know by staying professional and looking for other opportunities. Many people do like to do what your grandmother did, of going to work. Some people like the idea of going to work at a bookstore or a cafe, or even at Walmart to be a greeter, because they don't have to think about it. They can do it, and then they go home, and they can do their other things rather than dragging work home with them, either in a sense of worry or actually bringing paperwork home.
And then there are other opportunities like, applying to board of directors and volunteer work, although you do stress in the book, don't over-volunteer.
Yes. One of the things that can become a problem in retirement is to become overcommitted. And this can be in terms of working, where you go right back to doing a thing where you we're just working all the time and not doing anything else. If it's working to earn money, and then the other possibility is that you are such a valuable commodity as a volunteer that everybody wants you because they see you as all of a sudden available
right, all
the time.
Right.
And so we talk to people about really thinking what their own priorities are. And certain volunteer jobs may be exactly what they want to do. But then it may get to be too much, and you have to learn to say no,
yeah.
Which is hard for us to do, especially if we're being flattered into something. If somebody tells us we are the best and last hope to take on a particular project, you know, it's hard.
Beware of flattery.
When you're being flattered into it, it's hard to say no, but you do have to. We talk about setting boundaries and sticking to your own priorities. And, you know, setting boundaries, you can just say, you know, I have just left my job, I've just retired, and I've promised myself that for 6 months I won't sign on to anything.
Right.
That I'll consider things, and thank you so much for thinking of me, but I'm not even going to start thinking about these things for 6 months.
Yeah. You say in the book, and I think this is a great opportunity here to learn stuff that maybe you wanted to learn earlier and didn't have the time for, but you say, ask yourself and others what skills are needed in this new economic environment, and which of your skills respond to those needs, and how you can best position yourself
yeah.
for them. And
yeah.
I loved this story. It's about Bob. He's in his 80s now. His reinvention story, he called it serendipitous, and it created so many opportunities for him. But he retired as a 3-star American Army general
mm-hmm.
and was overseas on a trip when he expressed to a friend while he was dining in Paris his interest in studying art history in Italy. So tell us the rest of the story.
Sure. Yeah, Bob, he's actually a friend of mine, so this was one of the stories I put in. I'll have to find it here in the book to get all the
It's page 93.
Page 93, so I can remember all the detail the way I wrote it. No, but it was really a true story, and we, you know, I went back and checked it with him and everything. But he was actually dining in Paris, and somebody overheard him and suggested that he teach a course at the American University. And then he went on and somebody suggested to him that he could get a job at a grad school in Bologna, Italy. He did that for 5 years. Then he was nominated unexpectedly to be president of the Monterey Institute of International Studies and did that for 11 years. And he's still working. He's a consultant in Washington. He's in his early 80s now. But all of these things happened just because they happened, and because he had skills from being in the Army, and he was able to apply them. And this is what happened. Now, in his case, these things just came into his life, and he was very good at what he did.
Yeah.
He was kind of an academic general, very smart guy. But what we recommend for people to do, and you read that very good, if I may say so, sentence out of the book about people using their skills and assessing what their skills are. We have an exercise called skills assessment, and we do it at our workshops. We do workshops for corporations, and we do retreats for individuals. And one of the things we do as the group gets to know each other near the end, we say, okay, write down your skills, things you think you could use in this economy or that you'd like to use in what you do next. So people write it down. You know, I'm a good accountant. I'm good with numbers. I'm a detail person. You know, whatever it is. I'm good at managing people. And then we ask around the room, okay, say more about Bob. Say more on top of what he said. Say what you think. And what happens with this is people begin to say, I really trust you, or I find you to be so wise, and you're so organized. And, you know, you begin to come up with these other kinds of things, and you can begin to think of yourself in a different way than
yes.
just in the box of being an accountant or I'm a banker. You
yes,
know, the way we identify ourselves with our business card.
Yeah, those are
I'm a professor. I'm this, I'm that. I'm a general.
Right, and those are ways that we would not ordinarily think of ourselves those when we ask other people
so
to give that kind of feedback.
And so these additional things. You know, I'm very flexible. I'm very creative. I love to solve problems. You know, I love to fill in the niche. You know, I love to get that stuff done. I love to connect the dots, you know. And it's a very, but you don't have to be in a group. I mean, we'd love it if everybody came to our retreat, but you can do it with friends and family also.
Well, the book has some great suggestions in it, and we're right at the end of our segment, Nancy. So I want to ask you to give out your website where people can find out more about you and your co-authors and the work that you're doing.
Yes, it's www.rebootbreak.com. So reboot and break is BREAK.com.
Fabulous. And there's a great segment in here on retirement robbers and other challenges and how to deal with those challenges that, or those excuses sometimes that we put in our way. But unfortunately, we don't have time to cover that today. The book is called The Retirement Boom. Co-authors Catherine Allen, Nancy Burke, my guest, Rita Foley, and Jay Smith. It's an all-inclusive guide to money, life, and health in your next chapter. Nancy Burke, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you. You're a great interviewer. It was really fun.
Thank you so much.
All
appreciate
the best to your listeners.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Bye.
And please do stay tuned. When we come back, we're going to look at the 2% solutions with Courtney White. You are listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. We'll be right back.
Too many people are suffering. Too many people are sad. Remake the world with love and happiness. Remake the world.
This is Martha Norwalk. Every Sunday morning, beginning at 9 a.m., thanks in part to Heaven and Earth Chinese Herbs for You, we cover the world of animals. This week, January 24th, it's Behavior Training and Healing Sunday with me, a rare opportunity to call in and talk to me about your animal friends. Whatever's going on with your animals, I can help you figure it out and coach you through to a resolution. I'll also have details on the new canine flu going around and what, if anything, you need to do about it. Martha Norwalk's Animal World, Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
When is the best time to talk to your family about staying in touch during a disaster? When floodwaters reach your door? When wildfires are engulfing the edge of your neighborhood? Or an earthquake is destroying buildings? Or is the best time, perhaps, today? During a disaster, you may not be able to stay in touch with your family or friends as easily as you think. Go to mil.wa.gov and make your emergency plan today. Don't wait. Communicate. Brought to you by Washington State Emergency Management Division, local emergency management agencies, FEMA, and the Ad Council.
Next week on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, it's all about community making a positive difference in the lives of others. Gary Wasden, director of King County's library system, will share how everyone's talking about it is sparking conversation on important issues. We'll also hear how Old Dog Haven helps create love connections by providing good homes for old dogs who've been abandoned. Tune in every Monday at noon Pacific time here on Alternative Talk, 1150 AM. And catch up with podcasts at conversationslive.net.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Follow me on Twitter at Vicki St. Clair.
1150kknw.com. It's why they invented the internet. We think. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
We make the world.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. And in this segment, we're looking at 2% solutions for the planet. Courtney White is my guest. He's a former archaeologist and Sierra Club activist. And he dropped out of the conflict industry, as he calls it, in 1997 to co-found the Quivira Coalition, which is a nonprofit dedicated to building bridges between ranchers, conservationists, and others around practices that improve economic and ecological resilience in Western working landscapes. He's also the author of Grass, Soil, Hope, Revolution on the Range and The Age of Consequences. He lives in Santa Fe and is joining us today to talk about his new book, 2% Solutions for the Planet, 50 low-cost, low-tech, nature-based practices for combating hunger, drought, and climate change. Courtney White, welcome.
Well, thank you so much for having me on your show.
My pleasure, and I love some of the solutions in here because, and we're going to go get into that, I want to just share a little bit more of your background with our listeners. This latest book, The 2% Solutions, I read really began with a previous book, Grass, Soil and Hope, when you wrote about carbon pioneers in Australia. You say as you traveled around, you got hopeful, you wanted to share that hope with us, and also you didn't have enough room to share all the great stories in that other book.
Right.
So tell us how this came about.
You bet. So my background, I live in New Mexico. My background is in conservation, but I met a rancher years ago that was doing some very conservation-minded ranching practices. We decided to start a nonprofit together to kind of wade into all the grazing and grazing wars and fights between ranchers and environmentalists, trying to find some common ground here. In the process, working with him, starting the nonprofit, I found a bunch of regenerative, resilient, sustainable things going on out there, farming, ranching, technology. And then 2009, I read a publication about how these things can improve the climate situation, meaning we have too much carbon in the atmosphere, and through better management of land, we can soak up that excess CO2 through photosynthesis in plants and put it in the soils. And that was kind of a revelation to me. I thought a lot about the land issues and the food issues. I hadn't thought about the climate connection. And so that led directly to Grass Soil Hope, which is an exploration of that scenario. How do we soak up more carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere through better land management practices? And then, of course, in writing that book, I found even more stories out there. We're an innovative and inventive species. We like to figure stuff out. And here was a big problem, and here were lots of small but potentially scalable solutions. And the ones that didn't make it into the book, I decided to collect, took some pictures, talked to the publisher, Chelsea Green, and they said, you bet, let's keep going. Let's bundle them together in a new book. And that's how we got 2% Solutions for the Planet.
And I think it's important, as do you, I know, to share that hope, because we do hear about the doom and the gloom. And so,
right.
You know, if we don't hear the differences that people are making,
right.
You know, and know what's going on, it's more difficult for us to become part of that positive movement. And
right.
You say all of these, you profile 50 innovative solutions. They're all practical. They're all common sense, on-the-ground solutions. They impact climate change, food, water. We don't have to invent anything. They're already in
right.
existence. They're already being used.
So
give us an example of some of what's happening with farming. Like I love this story of a farm that's built on a rooftop in Brooklyn.
Right. And so many folks are looking, you know, kind of thinking outside the block. A box, to use a kind of cliche. How can we grow food? How can we move animals across these landscapes in innovative ways? And there's a lot of farming stories in the book and ranching stories. But one of the more amazing ones I found in my research was urban agriculture. How can we grow food within city limits? You know, half the world's population now lives within city limits. And in digging into a little bit, I found a story about a rooftop farm in Brooklyn, New York. I got a chance to go visit. You take a subway, you get off the subway station, you walk down the street, and you go up three flights of stairs, and there's a farm on top of this large building.
It.
And there is the New York Empire State Building right across the river, just a short distance away. It's not a big farm. It's a small farm. It's a pretty big building, but she Annie Novak, who's the young person who started this farm, is growing tomatoes and spices and other things. But it's sort of more about how do we look at our cities differently? How do we what do we do with these nooks and crannies in our cities that aren't really doing much, like rooftops, for example? And she said, let's grow some food. And she got volunteers, a lot of them young people, and she started this program where she grows this food. And it's expanded. There's now another group in New York called the Brooklyn Grange that is producing a lot of food in Brooklyn from other rooftops. Boston has a rooftop garden, and I'm sure by now there's more. And this is even beyond all the other urban agriculture in Detroit. They're growing a lot of food in the empty lots, abandoned parts of the city. There's a lot of small animal agriculture, not just chickens. But, you know, this kind of... Folks are thinking, how do we solve these problems? How do we grow our food closer to home? I mean, they're not going to feed New York this way. But nevertheless, it's a different way of just kind of looking at the problem. That's what the book is about. I'm trying to tell folks there's a different narrative here rather than the big doom and gloom.
That's right.
Or the big solutions. You know, we have to have these big geoengineering or treaties or whatever. Well, no. I mean, there are smaller solutions that are potentially scalable. And more importantly, people have been at this for decades. We don't have to wait for some big invention from Silicon Valley to figure these problems out.
Well, there are so many great stories in this book, but a couple of things I want to really touch on. I mean, you touch in the book, just to let listeners know, you talk about solutions that soak up carbon dioxide in soils, reduce energy. You talk about sustainability. To intensify food production. You talk about increasing water quality and quantity and illustrate that with a whole bunch of stories and pictures in the book. One of the things that I was told years ago when I went to an environmental filmmakers weekend, we sat for 3 days in a hotel just watching film after film, was cows are bad for the environment. And I spoke fairly recently with Nicolette Hahn Nyman. I don't know if you're familiar with her.
I do.
Yeah,
I do.
Bill Nyman has the Nyman Ranch, of course, with grass-fed cows, etc. And she wrote a book called Defending Beef, saying, no, that's not true. So give us your perspective, if you would, on that.
Oh, sure. And this goes back to the nonprofit that I co-started with a rancher who was ranching differently. And the quick answer is... you know, there's a relationship between grass and grazers in North America. It's been going on for 66 million years. It's not with cattle, of course, but with herbivores, bison, for example, and the way they graze, they move as a mob across the landscape, or used to anyway, graze, you know, intensively, and then move on and never come back. And that's how nature likes these landscapes to be grazed, very intensely, but for a very short period of time, and off they go. So the ranchers that we work with try to mimic that process, that nature-based way of moving across these landscapes. When you graze that way, there's all kinds of benefits. The old grass gets mowed off. The animals get the grass they need. So if you have cattle, then that becomes a meat product if you're a meat eater. And so there's all kinds of benefits for grazing in nature's image. So folks who don't like cattle or see problems with cattle production, generally the cattle are not managed that way. They're managed poorly, they're overgrazing, or they're in feedlots, you know, the big stinky feedlot thing.
Yeah.
And the ranches we work with are all grass-based, meaning that the animals are on the grass all their lives, which is how nature intended. And that's kind of one of the threads of all the stories in the book, is that ultimately nature has the best ideas. We, as a species, tend to think, oh, no, we've got the best ideas. And then we override what nature figured out a long time ago, like how photosynthesis works, you know, just pulling carbon out of the atmosphere from plants and putting them in the roots. And so most of these stories are one way or another kind of going back to nature, back to natural principles, like the way animals graze and move across landscapes, or the whole section on farming. I mean, the one thing that really opened my eyes on this was what plowing does to landscapes, tilling. It's terrible.
Yes, you said if we could do one thing for the planet, it would be get rid of the plow.
Yeah, and, so, you know, and I think for many folks that's probably a shock. It was kind of a shock to me when I first heard it. But kind of the quickest way to explain it is that, you know, nothing in nature tills or plows the way that we plow, you know, meaning these big plows that turn over the soil. When you turn over soil, you expose all the life in the soil, the microbes, protozoas and things, to the killing effect of rain and sun and wind and erosion and water, and so the soil loses its fertility. It washes away in big storms. You have to add fertility back with chemicals. That's how we get chemical-based agriculture. I mean, there's and we've been doing it for 5,000 thing to do. There's a great quote from an agronomist years ago, someone who worked with farmers back in the 40s. He wrote down and said that there is no scientific reason to till, anyone's discovered, meaning why are we doing this? So if you don't till, and there's a whole no-till agriculture out there, which is just what it sounds like. They don't till. They put the seeds in the soil through a chisel plow.
Huh.
And then the grass, the cover stays there, the water stays in place, the nutrients stay in place, the plants grow. I mean, it's more complicated, and it's kind of a different way of looking at agriculture. But, again, nature likes cover, it likes diversity, it likes nutrients to stay in the ground. So there's a real movement out there called the no-till movement,
right.
I would encourage. It's a little bit more complicated because there's weeds are an issue and herbicides can be an issue. But basically, yeah, if we didn't till, if we didn't turn earth over, we would do multiple good things for the planet.
That's so interesting. But this is how we got into the mess we're in, by looking for the cheap, the quick, and the easy, and the
right.
the Band-Aid solution. And so
right.
When we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Courtney, I want to ask you about regenerative practices. You say they can feed the world, and don't let anyone tell you otherwise. So I want to hear what you have to say on that when
sure.
we come back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. My guest is Courtney White. His book, 2% Solutions for the Planet. We'll be right back.
It sure is milk raising in the grass.
Raising in the grass is a guess, baby, can you hear?
What a trip, just watching as the world goes.
Next week on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. It's all about community making a positive difference in the lives of others. Gary Wasden, director of King County's library system, will share how everyone's talking about it is sparking conversation on important issues. We'll also hear how Old Dog Haven helps create love connections by providing good homes for old dogs who've been abandoned. Tune in every Monday at noon Pacific time here on Alternative Talk 1150 AM and catch up with podcasts at conversationslive.net.
Let's see if I guess that this just isn't working.
Knowing you have a great idea for a book is one thing, writing it another. So what's stopping you? Maybe you can't find time. Maybe you don't know where to begin. Maybe you wrote a couple of chapters, then disappeared down a rabbit hole. Or maybe you'd rather someone else write it for you. Partnering with the right coach or ghostwriter can make all the difference between talking about your book and finishing your book. As an award-winning writer and strategic consultant, Vicky St. Clair's storytelling credits span from business, health, self-help, and memoir to New York Times and USA Today best-selling anthologies. Vicky partners with people just like you at the exact level you need. Whether you need a little encouragement, editorial guidance, or full-blown ghostwriting and consulting services. If you're serious about telling the story you know is inside you, stop procrastinating. Let's get your story down on paper. Contact Vicky today. Email Vicky at VickySt.Clair.com or call 1-800-495-7617. See more about Vicky and her work at VickySt.Clair.com.
Hi, I'm Britney Spears. I've had the pleasure of singing all over this great nation, but today I'm lending my voice to the 15 million kids in America struggling with hunger. Every year, billions of pounds of excess food go to waste, while 1 in 5 children may be left without enough food for a meal. But it doesn't have to be this way. That's why the Feeding America nationwide network of food banks helps to get food to families in need. Visit feedingamerica.org to learn how you can help. Together we can solve hunger. Together we're Feeding America.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Making a difference, one word at a time.
Tell your friends, the place to be is Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Very pleased to be talking today with conservationist Courtney White. His new book is called 2% Solutions for the Planet, 50 low-cost, low-tech, nature-based practices for combating hunger, drought, and climate change. And this is just full of profiles of 50 innovative ideas that people are using around the world. And as we said in the beginning of the book, it was spawned because as Courtney was traveling Australia and traveling the world, he just had found too many great ideas to fit into that book. So I want to let everyone know that Courtney is coming to Seattle on Wednesday, February 10th. He'll be at the Seattle Town Hall at 7 p.m. Wednesday, February 10th. He'll be doing a... you'll be speaking, right, Courtney?
I will.
Yeah, and then doing an audience Q&A afterward and then a book signing.
Right.
And you partnered on that, I believe, with the Washington State chapter of the Nature Conservancy. So again, that's right. Wednesday, February 10th, 7 p.m. at Seattle Town Hall. And I said that when we came back, I wanted to ask you your views on regenerative practices because you say they can feed the world. And don't let anyone tell you otherwise because there are those who say that's rubbish.
Right. And, you know, and we face the challenge of a world population that currently is about 7 billion and is projected to rise to at least 9 billion by mid-century. So it's not a academic question. You know, how are we going to feed not only the current population, but the future larger population? So there's two kind of schools of thought. One is, you know, more of the same, more of the industrial agriculture, more chemicals, more GMOs, all that kind of stuff. That's how we'll do it. The other school of thought, which I belong to, is the regenerative school of thought, that we can actually intensify food production sustainably, and meaning produce more food in a regenerative or sustainable manner, and to feed those folks without diminishing our natural resources. So your listeners may be saying, oh, well, how are you going to do that? Well, let me give you just a quick story from the book about Sam Montoya, who was a small scale rancher outside Albuquerque, New Mexico. And Sam, he lives on a Native American reservation, Sandia Reservation, and he took a small chunk of land. It's about 90 acres. He divided it into 33 pastures with electric fencing. He put out 220 head of cattle, and he moves them every day around the 93 acres, one day in each of these pastures or paddocks. And the idea being that he's got a lot of cows for arid New Mexico. That's a lot of animals in a small acreage. And by moving them every day and irrigating the ground, he grows a lot of grass and the animals get fat. Well, that's about double the stocking rate on land out here, meaning he's doubling the food that he's growing by managing the grass in a regenerative way, meaning that, in fact, he calls himself a grass farmer, not a cattle rancher. I'm here to grow grass. It's all sustainable, resilient, regenerative, whatever word you want to use. Again, the animals are moving around, kind of like that bison that we talked about before.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you can do this. I mean, and I know that scientists who've looked at organics have said, yes, we can increase yields. We can match production. I know that's disputed by the industry. I don't like to get involved in those arguments. I just like to say, hey, here are some practices that we can do that can sustainably or regeneratively produce more food.
Mm-hmm.
In the book, quickly, is another example from Europe where, and I thought this was great, Europe's got some space issues. You know, they got a lot of folks, not a lot of space.
Right.
So some French scientists came up with an idea of putting solar panels above farm fields. And the idea was to produce renewable energy while producing food from the same plot of land. And there were some issues they had to work out with shade and things, but they worked it out. And the panels are up high. Folks can get under them. The panels are efficient. That produces energy and money for the farmer. And the food gets grown underneath it. And they kind of worked out all the spacing, all the shading. What a cool idea. And we can grow food and produce energy from the same plot of land.
Yeah.
And that's what I mean by innovation. And we're smart.
We are.
We turn our smarts to good things, we can solve these problems.
Yeah, and not just us, but we should look at insects. You talk in the book about beetles. You call them carbon engineers. You talk about the beaver, how they make a difference. I mean, all these little things that so many people think are inconsequential if they disappear, but they're not.
Well, and, you know, there's the whole last part of the book is about wildlife. I didn't want to, we tend to focus on food and farming and ranching and tend to leave nature out of this equation when nature has not only a right, but also has, we can work cooperatively together. So there's, you know, a chapter on beavers, which they do cool things. Dung beetles, which roll up animal dung and put it in the soil, and that's great. And there's bees, and there's bears, and there's birds. If we look to nature for inspiration, for how it works, how it's worked for a long time, kind of model our activities on natural principles, all these solutions just pop up.
Right. Can you share this story very quickly with our listeners? It's a segment called Poop and Stomp about Globe, Arizona, and how life is being created on totally lifeless soil.
Yeah. It's called a Poop and Stomp, and it was an idea that I found out through a rancher who lives in Globe, Arizona, where they have lots of mines. And if you know anything about mining out west, they create these huge waste piles that are lifeless, and they're really a problem. And when rains come, they erode. They put all this nasty sediment into the creeks. So he got this, and the mine companies do all this chemical stuff to try to stabilize them. It's really just a mess from the start. Terry Wheeler, the rancher, got this idea. Well, what if you put hay and water out and had some animals graze essentially on these large mine tailings? He puts down seed. He likes to point out. What if you're a gardener, what does it say on the back of the seed package? It says, press seed firmly into soil. So what he does is he's having his cows do that. So he puts the seed down, he puts the hay down, he turns the animals out. They stomp on the hay and the seeds, and then the fertilizer comes and grass grows. When he approached the mines, mine executives said, no, that'll never work. They said the cows will roll down the mine tailings. You know, they can't do that. Of course, they can do that. Pretty agile animals, and when I was there some years ago, there they were. His cows were out on this mine tailing. There was grass growing all over it. And again, the idea being lifelessness into life. And so he was adding carbon and water and manure and seeds, and life grew
and regenerating. I love it.
That's all it takes.
Yeah. Well, we're right at the end of our segment. I want to ask you if you can say this in like 20 seconds. How do you explain to your children what we've done to the planet? What's your approach?
Well, I talk to my children all the time about this because they're aware of the situation. I tell them that on the one hand, we're doing some lousy things. On the other hand, we're a highly inventive, creative, can-do species, and folks are figuring these things out. And it's kind of a race right now between the better angels of our nature and our destructive side, and I'm hopeful that the better angels win out.
There we go. Well, they will. If they get your book, they'll find lots of innovative ways to start helping out here. 2% Solutions for the Planet is the book. Courtney White, my guest. Don't forget, he'll be at Seattle Town Hall Wednesday, February 10th at 7 p.m. for a talk and book signing and Q&A. Courtney White, thank you so much for being with us. And the best website to reach Courtney is awestthatworks.com, awestthatworks.com. Thanks, Courtney. Appreciate it.
I appreciate the opportunity.
And we're right at the end of our segment today, so I'm going to leave you with a couple of information points. You can find me at info@conversationslive.net. You can also call me with questions or comments on today's show, or if you forgot anything, you need information, you can reach me at 800-495-7617, 800-495-7617. And you can also find us at conversationslive.net with past podcasts, and Twitter at Vicky St. Clair, and Facebook at Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. And that's it for this week. We will be back next week. Until then, live well, live strong.
Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.